All right, folks, welcome back to our first recap of the football season. Check us out, MWCWire.com. That's where we do all of our football stuff and basketball, too. Jeremy Moss with Matt Kennerly. Facebook, Mount West Wire, Twitter, all that fun stuff. But we had the first weekend, and for us, it was a good test ride since we had three games spread out through the whole day.
And you know what? I think for the conference as a whole, yeah, I think the Mountain West turned out pretty well, all things considered.
I think it did probably, well, I was going to say better than what I thought, but 2-1 is what I expected. Nearly had, for a brief moment, 3-0. For a brief moment.
Well, what's important is we were both 3-0 against the spread. Let's not overlook that.
Exactly. I should pull up those picks, but we were 3-0 against the spread. What did we pick for the score versus San Jose State?
I don't remember if we had an exact score. Of course, people can go back to our, you know, either our whole preview or our specific to San Jose State South Florida preview and check that out.
Yeah, speaking of those previews and stuff, what we're going to do that for most previews. We'll debate about the FCS previews next week. We may just lump those into one because there's like seven of them. Preview, we'll break it up. Recap, you get us for the full hour or however long we decide to record. I have the scores here really quick. What was the spread for the San Jose State game? Did it end up being 22?
We went as if it were 22.
Okay. You didn't. You picked 40-20, so you were incorrect.
Oh, I was.
Yes, and I went 38-17, so I was also incorrect.
Oh, dang. Okay, so we were 2-1, but still, you go 2-1 every week, you're still making a lot of money in Vegas. So
66% winning percentage right there. That's what I call it.
Counting that as a win for us.
Always. So it's, yeah, the games, it was a good weekend. What would you grade the overall weekend?
I would give it probably a solid B. You know, even though San Jose State, well, which we'll get into in a little bit, you know, they showed for about a quarter and they, you know, threw a scare into a ranked team. And I think that that counts for something. And then as far as, you know, the other two teams, you know, Hawaii, one of the things I brought up during our team preview in the off season is, you know, last year they learned how to win on the road. And yesterday was kind of a testament to the fact that they didn't forget how to do that. And then for Colorado State, you know, hard to imagine that opener at that new stadium going much better than it did.
I was a bit, we'll get to that. We'll start that game in a second. I was a bit concerned in that first quarter. Just wasn't going extremely well. But I'd be about the same as you because the Rams probably won more than I thought they would because we both predicted a 10-point victory. I thought Hawaii would have had a much easier time versus UMass. And then San Jose State, while the score was a 20-point difference, 22-point difference, they played better in that first quarter. And then, let me be honest with you, we'll get to that game, but I was bored in the second half. Sorry, folks. I was.
That's okay. You don't have to apologize.
It was punt. I'm just saying it was punt after punt after punt. First quarter was exciting.
Yeah.
First half was exciting. You don't get that every time, but it's like, give me some drives, folks. I don't want three and out. It wasn't just San Jose State. South Florida had one or two drives, but outside of that, they were just punting four, five, six-play drives, but I'd get about a B. I do like you saw Chris Andres' tweet about the grading the weekend in emoji style.
I did.
I think San Jose State with the what is that officially called? Whatever.
I believe it is just called the shrug.
The shrug, like eh. True.
Yeah.
And he goes Rams on fire. Of course, Hawaii with the I guess he took Robert Kekalula's thing a little bit. Rainbow's thumbs up, and then yeah, that was a good weekend. I'd get about a B. Be above passing grade because 2-1 teams did well. And let's get to the game. So we start with Colorado State and Oregon State.
Okay, so let me start by asking you this because I watched the whole thing.
Okay.
You know, after watching that first quarter, did you expect that the game that the result of the game would be as lopsided as it was?
I did not because you saw Nick Stevens get that huge hit. And I'm like, oh, crap, because he took a shot, and he wasn't doing particularly well throwing the ball in the first little bit. But, and then you see Oregon State, where when they're throwing the ball, they had they overthrowing guys, like they're wide-open guys for the Beavers that he was missing, and they had over the top quite a bit open. Like, there could have been a few plays, a big difference had they been more accurate throwing the ball. But I did not expect it to be as big as a victory for the Rams. But the Rams, you mentioned on Twitter, the running game, the offensive line is better than I thought because they have Jake Bennett there, but they missed a few other guys from last year who graduated. That offensive line was just amazing. They just threw around Oregon State after that, basically, midway second quarter on. They had their way with them.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like a tale of two halves, you know, or even more than that, like a tale of like the first quarter and then the three quarters after that. Because, you know, what you noticed early on was that, you know, Oregon State, they, you know, I guess, first of all, credit to the Rams for mostly containing Ryan Nall. I thought that they would try to make him a focal point of the offense much the same way that they did last year. And, you know, he had an okay game. Like, he ended up, I'm trying to look it up right now. You know, he ended up with 119 yards on 15 carries, which, you know, on paper doesn't sound great. But, you know, they eventually made it lopsided. What I noticed early on was that the Beavers were having a lot of success throwing the football. And to me, that was really troubling, especially like that first touchdown, for instance, to Hernandez, where it was more or less a blown coverage. And the dude was like wide open by about 10 yards or something like that. You know, in the first quarter, they got most of their first downs, you know, with the passing game, and they ended up getting about 116 yards through the air. And, you know, coming into the season, I had a question, you know, about how well this defense would be able to hold up if it was going to be the kind of situation where the offense would have to put up a lot of points because the defense was kind of a bend but don't break kind of thing. But then you started to see that change a little bit in the second quarter where, you know, they were able to kind of clamp down a little bit on Luton. They were able to, you know, start asserting themselves on offense a little bit. And that was really where Nick Stevens started breaking out. Because if you look at that second quarter, he was 8 of 11 for 111 yards. I was going to say, I think that's what you want the offense to be. And then by the time they got to the third quarter, that's when everything started clicking on all cylinders.
Here's what I'd say about the changes they made defensively. They allowed for a good while to, because like I mentioned, they had his over-the-top passes. Like, Jake Luton still had 300 yards in this game.
Yeah.
There was a lot of underneath stuff. Like, they were going to give up 8, 10, 12 yards, like a little across-the-middle passes. They were doing their best to not get beat over the top.
Yeah.
Even with that, there was, like, long passes, 25, 39, 34, 20-plus-yard passes. One's Ryan Nall, so it's kind of a screen there. But they were not, after the first quarter, when they noticed they could go deep, they were doing what they could to keep everybody underneath, and they were fine giving up 6 to 12 yard passing plays essentially just to get beat on the big one. And that could be an issue when they're playing like Cedric Wilson, when they're playing, who knows what CJ Johnson could do at Wyoming, when they're playing teams like that can go down the field and pass the ball. Even Utah State, if they're going 4 or 5 wide with Ronquavion Tarver and everybody in that David Yost offense, that could be a concern if they're going to go deep and they don't have 5 cornerbacks or 5 defensive backs, I should say, back there to stop. So that's something I want to see change, but the defense stepped up. 5 turnovers, they had a pick 6. They did a lot of good things defensively, but there are some concerns, like that first big running play, that 75-yarder, because they stopped Ryan Nall after that. He had 115, but after that one play, he was shut down. Basically, I think he had, 10 yards in the second half, I think, if that. Not very many.
Yeah.
And so missing Kevin Davis is a big deal, but they made plays like you had Kevin Nutt Jr. Look at the wrong one. I thought it's an interception, but they had a lot of guys who make tackles, TFLs. They had, half a sack, 1 full sack in the game, 6 tackles for loss. They were doing good things. I think their rushing defense is fine, even though that 5.2-yard average given up is a bit misleading because that 175-yarder. Take away that, or even give them half of that, they only had 150 total yards rushing the ball. So it's basically one play.
Okay, so here's what I'm encouraged by, and you mentioned it already, and it's the fact that they were way more opportunistic than they've shown themselves to be in the last couple of years. Because if you look back, you know, across 2015 and 2016, they've been kind of in the middle of the pack as far as, you know, turnovers forced and stuff like that. So to me, you know, the heads-up play that Trey Thomas made in returning that pick 6 was obviously very, very well done. But, you know, they forced a couple of fumbles. You know, they, like you said, they had five total turnovers in all. And I think that, you know, if they are going to give up a lot of yardage and some points, as a Rams fan, I would be encouraged by the fact that they were able to, you know, force plays or create plays in a way that they weren't always able to do in the last couple of years. If they have that going for them, you know, that sets up the offense to be more successful. And though they didn't always take advantage of the opportunities that the defense created, like they had, you know, a field goal in the first half when they started at their own 10, or when they started at the Oregon State 10-yard line. You know, they weren't able to move the ball, but they got 3 points. You know, if they can still do that, like if they can force interceptions, if they can create fumbles, that's going to make this offense really hard to beat.
It will be. And I'm still leaning, because it's obviously one game, and Oregon State might win only 4 games this year. They looked okay at times, but I'm still of the opinion that the offense is going to need to do more to get to victories than, say, defense. Like, I don't see his defense winning them games.
Yeah.
If somebody stops this offense and holds them to 21 points, I don't know if they can get a victory by only scoring 21 points. Maybe, but
you're definitely right about
that.
They
give 27 to Oregon State team that's not that great, I don't think. I would say, and it's still early too, so it's like, what, based off last year, like when they played San Diego State, yeah, they put up 60 points, but they also gave up 30 to an Aztec offense that, okay at times, nothing, obviously, Donald Pumphrey, they run the ball very well, but not an explosive offense by any means playing for the Aztecs. And like this game was close, like the score, because I was a little bit behind, so I wasn't live tweeting throughout it, but this game was a bit closer than I thought. Like, yeah, they won 58-27, but it was still, I thought the Beavers had a few chances to maybe get back in this game, even though fourth quarter, those last couple touchdowns at the end put it away, but they were still reasonably close when you look at it, kind of going score by score a little bit. Because if you look at it, it was still 37-27 with 12 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
Credit to the Rams for stopping Oregon State from getting any closer, but it was still a 10-point game with 12 minutes left, but then the Rams bust off 3 touchdowns to make it look like, which was a dominant victory, and scoring 24 points the final quarter. I just want people to realize, like, while the Rams played very well, there were still, it wasn't really in hand until near the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side to what I was saying about, you know, being encouraged by the turnovers they were able to create, it's also worth pointing out that Oregon State was 10 of 16 on third downs. And, you know, if you look at last year's numbers, they had a similar kind of struggle getting off the field on third downs. They were actually next to last in the conference in opponents' third down conversion rates. So, you know, yeah, they can celebrate the victory. I think Mike Bobo gave them 12 hours to celebrate the win, and so they're already back to business by this point. But, you know, that's something to keep an eye on, because, you know, as opportunistic as the defense looked yesterday, you know, if they can't get off the field more often, that's where you might start running into trouble in some of these other games later on this year.
Yeah, because they, like I said, they gave up. I think ESPN has an error in their stat page. They say Colorado State had 0 first downs, 0 for 0 right. On third downs. I think I looked at it like, wait a minute. But yeah, like the Beavers moved the ball, 23 first downs. You're right, 10 of 16. They had 450 yards. Like, when they play Colorado, they play them Friday night. The Rams play CU on Friday night. So I need to find a way to get Pac-12 Network. So I got to look into that. Maybe I'll sign up for Sling or something for a week or whatever channel gets it. But they're fine. It's like, they got the victory. It's like, what else do you want? They almost scored 60 points to get to Pac-12 team. And their defense had 5 turnovers. There are concerns. I would say the biggest, my biggest surprise, because we don't need to spend a million hours on all these games here. My biggest optimistic about, well, first off, I put out some predictions. Michael Gallup blew it away, 11 for 134, first of all. His touchdown streak snapped, but they did pretty well throwing the ball to him and everybody else. And I guess I was sort of right with Olabosi Johnson having a big game, had a 66 yards receiving. But my biggest thing in this game was how the offensive line paved the way, but also this Rams, I'm going to say it right now, this Rams rushing attack, it's not going to rival New Mexico or Air Force in yards per play or even total yards, but this might be the deepest running back group in the conference. Dalen Dawkins did pretty good with 67 yards. Rashard Boddy, which apparently Bobo loves him when you hear Aaron Taylor or Rick Neuheisel talking about with Bobo about body. He had 56 yards. He could have had about 80 because near the end of the game, he fell. His hand hit the ground about 5 yards out. Could have had about 20 more. He came out of nowhere, redshirt freshman. Marvin Kinsey, who I was still skeptical he would play or play much because of the knee injury back in December, had 34 yards. Izzy Matthews was the bulldozer, did okay, 28 yards. But those guys four deep, who can rival that rushing attack overall? Like, they can put in almost anybody and do a good job after one game. Yeah, Matthews didn't get the carries I thought, but he still got key first downs and had a touchdown late in the game. Or not late in the game, but short yards touchdown. Sorry, Kinsey, you got the late touchdown. Sorry, but like, who goes four deep that has this much talent? Because Izzy Matthews was considered one of the best running backs in the conference, and he only had 28 yards in this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point to kind of add to that point. You know, what we talked about in the preview is, like, I didn't think there would be one guy getting 20 carries in this game, but they all got at least eight. And, you know, at least in my opinion, we got at least, you know, from the mind that brought you hashtag throwbos last week. could we start the hashtag bodied? Because did you see that dude run people over?
Yeah. Redshirt freshman tearing it apart.
So, Rams fans, feel free to use that at your leisure next Saturday and every other Saturday after that. Because I think, you know, this, like you said, this running game is deep. It's dangerous. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I know during spring, or not during spring, but fall, they mentioned Body, and there was some other guy, I don't recall, he didn't get in the game to play, but if he does that, and they're playing CU, they're playing against David Moa, Boise State, they're playing against, if they play San Diego State, or like Wyoming's linebacking group's pretty good, like with Logan Wilson or Carl Granderson up on the front there, Utah State should have a good defense. It's going to be a hard time to stop if you can mix in whoever. The only thing I'd like to see is more carries to Matthews, but I was thinking like 25 carries between Dawkins and Matthews combined. 24, close enough, but I thought Matthews would have done a bit better, but he did his job, got the first down and a touchdown. But like, who could, like, maybe New Mexico with Richard McCorrels or whoever else you're going to put out there, Tyron Owens. UNLV is a good 1-2 punch, Lexington Thomas, Charles Williams, but going four deep, nobody.
You're probably right.
Any last thoughts on this game?
I think we're probably all set to move on.
Wait, sorry. One thing I want to mention here. One Twitter feed you guys should follow, at least after the game, like Pro Football Focus, the college version. That's PFF_college. They grade all these games out. And the one matchup we're looking at, who was a Michael Gallup and Xavier Crawford.
Yes.
Not Crawford.
It was Xavier Crawford.
Let's look at the pregame one. They matched up, it looks like, four times. Gallup had three receptions for 63 yards against Crawford, who I talked to the guys from Rivals over at, was it Beaver's Edge, that he's, and you mentioned it as well, going to be a pretty good prospect at the pro level. You also had run stopping. Josh Watson was the player of the game with five run stops on defense. And then they also had Nick Stevens, their clean pocket QB rating, whatever their thing is, 134.8. So he had Watson, Trey Thomas, and Dalton Fackrell is the top-rated players from Pro Football Focus for the Rams side. So, congratulations. You ready to go to Amherst, Massachusetts, I guess?
Yes.
Nick Rolovich is the best coach in college football. Can we already agree on that?
That might be a little bit hyperbolic, but continue.
You know why. He doesn't like to punt. I don't go 5,000 miles to punt the ball.
Well, no, of course not. Why would you do that?
Just saying, his quotes and everything he does, he's the coach I'd like to talk to all the time, if possible. He wanted to bring a monkey to media day, but he settled for Elvis. That's still a pretty good consolation prize. So this game, were you surprised it was this close? 38-35, Hawaii won. They had a late drive to get to victory, but this Hawaii team didn't inspire all that much for me in this game being as close as it was.
It was kind of a weird game, though, when you think about it, because especially early on, Hawaii was moving the ball on offense just about at will, but they were doing a lot of really dumb things in that first half. Like, Drew Brown, his only interception of the game was kind of it was a really ill-advised pass down the sideline to Amon Barker, and it was underthrown, and Isaiah Rodgers was, like, all over it for the interception. But even more than that, in that first half, I'm trying to remember exactly how the penalty breakdown was. I'm trying to look at what they had overall.
I do know, because I actually had to sound up in the second half, they had, on that final drive, there was a penalty for Hawaii, and it was late in the fourth quarter. They said that was their only penalty in the second half. I think it was like a false start or something.
Yeah, so they had 9 penalties overall for 88 yards, and I know for a fact that 80 of those yards came in the first 20 minutes of play. And
that was with
Fred Ulu-Perry, swiping at one of the UMass defenders, and that was with Chris Posa punching a UMass defender in the helmet and getting ejected.
Yeah.
So it was just really weird at first. But, I mean, on the whole, you look back at what the Warriors were able to do on offense, especially, Brown had almost 400 yards and 3 touchdowns, including that long touchdown run, catch and run to John Ursua. And we know for sure that Hawaii probably has a new number one receiver because Ursua had 12 catches for 272 yards. And, St. Just had an okay game. He had 23 carries for 80 yards. To me, what I was a little bit disappointed in was the fact that Massachusetts had a lot of success on offense as well.
Yeah, they we thought they'd play two quarterbacks, but Andrew Ford played pretty well. They only brought in Comas for a little bit, 1 for 4, but nearly 280 yards for Ford, who played last year, so I was expecting him to play more than Comas there. But they moved the ball. They ran the ball okay, but like passing the ball, same thing. Adam Bredeman had 180 yards. They averaged 13 yards a reception. And I was thinking with Hawaii's defense, who they have back there, its secondary is pretty good. But UMass is not going to be a good team. Maybe I underestimated the travel not being an issue, even though they were on the East Coast for about a week. Like, they went to New York City, they drove up, and so, like, on Tuesday, they've been there for a while to get acclimated. And being week one, like, and when you look at the numbers for a defense, like, Johnny Tavai did pretty good. 2 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 13 total tackles. They had 4 sacks, 7 TFLs, a couple pass breakups, but UMass shouldn't be scoring 35 points. They're not a very good football team.
Well, I mean, let's not forget, though, that this was the same UMass team that scored 40 points against this defense last year to close out 2018.
True. Yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, Hawaii had 4 sacks. But even beyond that, if you watched the game, you saw that Andrew Ford was under a lot of pressure a lot of the time. So I think if you're going to be encouraged by anything as a Warriors fan, you're probably encouraged by that. I'm not sure that they would want to blitz so much anymore because it seems like when they were bringing 5 guys and 6 guys, that was when Ford was able to get the ball to someone like Brenneman or Andy Isabella, who contributed to the majority of their offense as they did more often than anybody last year. So, it's kind of like it depends on how you decide to perceive, the performance. Because, yeah, they gave up a lot of yards, but they made a lot of plays and gave themselves an opportunity to win the game when it mattered most.
Like, going through the game, like, we mentioned about punting and all that fun stuff, but the biggest play of the game was clearly, where did it go? I thought he had a fourth. Didn't they have a fourth? Oh, here it is. The fourth down conversion. Like, they end up with a field goal. It's 4th and 1 at midfield. They go for it. They get a big 5-yard play. Then they go for it on twice, 4th and 2 at the 37. They went for it 2 times. They only got the field goal because they got to the 12, but there's a risk you gotta take. You're on the road. You're playing UMass, who's not a very good team. Hawaii is supposed to be maybe 7-win minimum team this year, and they got the job done when they needed to. Like, we joked about, don't punt and all that stuff. But that 4th and 2 play there at the 37-yard line, I was chatting with good buddies from Forgotten Five on DM and on Twitter. He's like, how does a John Ursa get downfield so wide open on that 4th and 2 play? He did a basic play across the middle and left him wide open for a huge, 23-yard gain. Yeah. Like, how does that guy get open? How do you not hit him off the line? Why don't you do a bump and run or do something so he can't have a clean route? And he, up the middle, slant, right, middle of the field, there's no safety there to be in front, no linebacker stepping back or anything. Note to Mountain West defense, you may want to push John Ursa off the line or do something, but that was a key play. They only got a field goal, and then their defense came up big. Like, you mentioned, like, the way Andrew Ford was moving the ball and throwing it. They had that huge sack on, it was 3rd and 10. Ford tried to extend the play, had to basically took it, was a sack, slide, whatever. He basically not gave himself up, but there was nothing he could do. He just kind of fell down, got a sack, 4th and 11. They punt, they go down the field, they got good field position, and just drove down the field, throwing to different guys like Ursa, Barker, quite a few things down the field. Then there's the one false start on the Ursa 52-yarder. Then the one penalty second half, 1st and goal at 7, false start. It's like, are you kidding me? But St. Juice did his thing, and they finally got the touchdown, and they were victorious. So it's a win. Come on. What are you going to complain about too much?
It wasn't the prettiest performance in the world, especially early on. You know, one of the things that I mentioned, you know, during the game was the fact that, you know, last year Hawaii was just about a top 10 team in turning trips inside of the 40 into points. And especially early on, I believe their first 4 possessions inside the 40, you know, turnover on downs, touchdown, punt after a whole bunch of penalties, turnover on downs. So, you know, while they were able to, you know, travel 6,000 miles and get a win, you know, the offense showed a lot to me, I think. And the defense did make a couple of plays. Let's not forget about, you know, Solomon Matautia's, you know, he had an interception, right?
There was one interception by, oh, I don't have it in front of me. I just see interception. Sorry.
I believe it was Matautia. Yeah.
Yes, you're there. It is very Bob. Correct.
So, I mean, you know, the defense showed a capability to make plays. It wasn't perfect. You know, they probably have some things to work on, but, you know, all things considered, I think that Hawaii fans are probably really happy with how that game turned out.
They should be. They fumbled the ball a couple times, but so did UMass. And again, it's a long travel. UMass isn't that great, but when's the last time you've seen Hawaii have to come from behind too often to get a victory like
this
against any level of competition? The close game last year versus UMass, the Air Force game in overtime, not very many. It's particularly, they're not at home, and they don't play well at home just because, just one last mention, travel and all that stuff. And just a road game in general, teams usually don't play as good unless you're a really good team away from home. So it's they're 1-0, and congratulations to Hawaii.
There you go.
All right, you ready for the final game of the weekend?
Let's do it.
So maybe I should have not watched this game at all, because San Jose State, South Florida, that's the game we're talking about. I was busy doing stuff. I'm like, okay, I got the game on DVR. I was kind of watching the Hawaii game because I couldn't really stop and record it at all. So I'm like, okay, my plan was to not watch this game very much at all because the final score outcome is kind of what I expected. However, you messaged me like, hey, you watched the game? I'm like, oh, in a minute. Find out, 16-0, San Jose State's up on South Florida. I'm like, okay, let's go to my DVR. Craps out for 25 minutes through all the points except for like a field goal.
So it's your fault the wheels came off then.
Exactly. I came back and people said, get out of here, South Florida's moving the ball, and I jokingly said, oh, I'll go make a roast, it'll take me 4 hours. I didn't make the roast, and San Jose State lost by 20 points.
Oh, it could have been though after that first quarter, right?
This team, like, they were moving the ball. Like, it's hard to know what's going on at fall camp because nobody covers the team, and we do our best to listen to coaches. And we had Anna at the game there tweeting and covering it for us with her recap and everything else. She was very surprised as well. I was very excited. Like, she went to San Jose State. She's like, what's going on? It's 16-0. This is crazy. But they moved the ball. Like, you want to talk fast football. I haven't seen a team move this fast. What's it, Chip Kelly to Oregon, really? Or maybe Mike Leach when he doesn't want to kneel the ball in the Mexico Bowl or something when he's playing Colorado State?
Honestly, it kind of reminded me of seeing Tulsa in person last year. But, I mean, to counter that point, though, I'm not sure that they were moving the ball all that successfully, because even when...
I said fast. Not necessarily successfully fast.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You did semantics, right? But I mean, even early on, what they were essentially doing was taking advantage of some serious field position advantages. You know, their 2 touchdown drives were only 47 and 6 yards. And, you know, maybe if they had been able to turn that first opportunity that they had where they kicked the field goal from, I believe, the 10-yard line, if they had turned that into a touchdown, you know, maybe then it could have been even more interesting than it was. But, you know, it took them nearly the entire game to put together a drive that went more than 47 yards. And, you know, I thought that if San Jose State was going to have a chance of winning this game, they were going to need to probably lead with their ground game. And if nothing else, I was really disappointed with how that turned out because Malik Roberson's Moore Ziegler, combined had 28 carries and 81 yards. Against a team like South Florida, where you're looking for that kind of upset bid, that's just not going to get the job done. And it put too much pressure on Josh Love to make plays, and he just wasn't up to it.
He made a few plays here and there. He only had two touchdowns, but three, like the second quarter on, three interceptions, only completed 50%. They brought him on till Aaron late in the game, who had a nice touchdown pass, 7-13. It's a running game. It's like that needs to be better because overall, when you combine the two quarterbacks, they're just okay, 50%. And they held like South Florida, their offense didn't do all that great. Quentin Flowers did pretty good, 212 in the air, but he only had 70 rushing yards, which for him, he had 1,600 last year. So they held him pretty well and had only one long of 22. So they held him in check overall, but we know the rushing defense in general hasn't been good for Spartans. Gave up 300 yards on the ground overall. They held Flowers okay, but like Tyce, Dearness Johnson, who ran over people like crazy with that 50-yard run, they give up a few too many big plays, but their defense, like making plays, like the turnovers and those type of things, the special teams, surprised me a bit. And that's going to be a way that if they're going to upset a team here and there, and I think they're going to be better than people think because maybe South Florida's terrible and they just got together in the second half because so is San Jose State. But if they could stop teams defensively like they did versus in South Florida, at least in the first quarter, make those special teams plays, but you can't go, like you said, that first field goal, they only went 5 yards. They need to sustain some drives, and that's where you're right. Roberson or Monroe or even Ziegler running the ball needs to do something to sustain drive because defense gets tired out there. You can't go three and out every time and put your defense back out there. That's already not very good.
Yeah, and I mean, in our team preview for the Spartans, one of the things that I mentioned was I like the playmakers that they have at wide receiver. Like, I think, guys like Bailey Gaither, who, how many yards did he have? Like 60 yards? Or he
100.
had 100 yards.
No,
I was trying to
100.
remember if it was him or Trey Hartley at 100 yards. But, you could see that they have guys who can make plays. But, when Love wasn't getting any help from the running game, especially in that second quarter, that's when he really started getting into trouble. Because if you look at the play breakdown, they only had 29 yards on 10 carries in that second quarter. And Love was, he was fine in the first quarter. He was 8 of 15, didn't have any turnovers, but he had those two back-breaking interceptions in the second quarter that really changed the tenor of the game.
Kind of reminds me of the Utah game a little bit last year where it was pretty close in that first half, first quarter or so, where I'm like, how are they beating Utah? How is it this close? How are they doing this or that? This kind of reminds me of that, and then it's kind of the wheels fall off. One thing I would like to note, very positive, only one sack allowed by that San Jose State offensive line.
That's true. That is a huge step in the right direction.
Because they had 50, I want to say, last year. It's like three a game, four a game almost. And then, like we mentioned, the defense, while not doing very great, doing very well stopping the run, they still had 11 tackles for a loss and three sacks of their own. And six pass breakups. That's a pretty big, like the defense was making plays and getting out there. It's just that South Florida, they gave up a few too many big plays, like the 50-yard run by Johnson for a touchdown. They had a 50-yard receiving pass to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, or a 49 pass to Temi Alaka for a touchdown. Too many big plays they gave up. Had they contained those, maybe South Florida drove down the field and they would have won 30 to 22 or 10 or 12 or 14 less points because of that. That's where the defense needs to come in and not give up those huge plays.
Yeah, because especially like in the first quarter, kind of going back, it was the first quarter and then it was everything else, right? So in that first quarter, USF had 17 attempts and only 22 yards on the ground. But if you kind of look at what they were able to do over the course of the entire game, they ended up running for about 315 yards. That they really kind of broke out in that second quarter when they had 174 yards on the ground. That's not going to get it done. I'm sure Brent Brennan and his staff aren't pleased that they were basically getting gashed on the ground and allowing the Bulls to kind of assert their will against this front seven. So I would expect them to, focus on that when they start thinking about their game against Cal Poly next weekend.
So let me ask you this: where would you? Because we haven't really done our power rankings, but San Jose State, projected last in their or near the bottom in that Mountain West Division. Was it them or San Jose or Fresno State who was last?
I believe it was San Jose State.
Where would you put them now after this game? Because they had one quarter that was really good. The rest of it, obviously, so-so, not doing much. What did you? Where would you put them now? I know nobody else has played a game, but are they as bad? Are they as bad as we thought?
Well, I said in the preview that I didn't think that they were because we know that they have some interesting pieces on both sides of the ball. It was a matter of, you know, how those questions, you know, at quarterback, for instance, or, you know, along the defensive line, how that was going to resolve itself one way or the other. As of right now, you know, do we, like, Love didn't really cover himself in glory, so I would kind of expect to see both him and Montel Aaron in the game next week. So, you know, if I have to answer the question, I'm kind of avoiding it a little bit. I don't know. I would say either, you know, last or next to last until they can get those big questions answered.
Okay. That's fair, because they did pretty good in the first quarter, so, and they... It's just after that, things fell off. They moved the ball. The defense played better than I thought in making plays. So I would say they're probably still at the bottom, but it wouldn't surprise me if they maybe like me surprised by them is getting 3 wins instead of like 2 or 1, essentially. But when you put – and let me ask you another reverse this again. Was South Florida that bad? Are they – should they be ranked the top 20 team? Because San Jose State's probably – what, at best, 100th rated team this year when it's all said and done, if that. If they struggle against the Spartans, how are they going to play against, like, Illinois, who's not very good, or when they start playing Houston, Temple, Navy in the American Conference?
That's kind of what I've maintained all along. I don't see that there's that huge of a gulf between a team like South Florida and, say, you know, Colorado State. Or even though they have yet to play, like, I've said the same thing about San Diego State and Boise State. Like, you know, why is it that that South Florida was getting votes to be a top 20 team in the AP and the coaches poll, where our teams here in the Mountain West were getting stuck with, you know, also receiving votes? You know what I mean? And I think that this...
I'll tell you why. Quentin Flowers, that's why. It's the only reason why. Quentin Flowers.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, Colorado State definitely gave the voters something to think about yesterday, and I expect that when we start talking about, you know, San Diego State and their opener, Boise State and their opener versus Troy, that they'll probably do the same thing, and so we'll see how it shakes out, and it'll be especially interesting to see how it shakes out in this first month in non-conference play.
So would you still put South Florida as the team to beat, I guess, overall for that coveted spot?
No, I never have.
Okay. Would you – okay, I assume we're on the same page. CSU, much better game than South Florida, right, based on opponent and production?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you opposite question. CSU, because you – who is your conference pick? You picked – who is your conference championship pick?
I honestly don't know if I ever made, like, a concrete championship pick because I had San Diego State and Colorado State in the championship game. I don't remember if I ever declared a winner.
Okay, that's all I want to know, the championship game. I was going to ask you if it changed your opinion of would you say the Rams are any better than you projected them. But if they're going to be in the conference title game and win the Mountain, it's not much higher you can really project them at the moment.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add from this weekend slate of games? Since we'll only have 3. We got 12 next week, so we got a lot of work to do.
Can we just give a shout-out to the people at UMass for making the live stream available to everybody for free?
Yeah, I guess I was talking to guy Matt Sazmarak, who does, if you follow him on Twitter, he does a lot of TV stuff for sports. I guess every UMass home game is going to be streamed live, partly because they don't have a TV deal because they're independent, but that's a big deal because it was on in Hawaii, but in the mainland, it's like, how are we going to watch it? Unless you had that 11 Sports Channel or Nesson in the area, you couldn't watch it. So we appreciate that very much. And it was a good quality, good audio, good commentary from the guys there, and it was a good camera angle, which sometimes you can't always get. Ask the CBS network guys who were faked out a couple times on some Rams plays.
That's true.
You want to know what my favorite part of the whole weekend was?
What's that?
I saw this pop up, and then people saw it later. I'm like, okay, whatever. Did you see the Oregon State play card?
Oh, the crying Jordan?
I saw it for a second. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't follow up after the next play or two where they fumbled it right after.
I know. That's amazing.
I just saw the play card. I'm like, okay, that's kind of odd. That's cool. Because they also had Ninja Turtle play card on there as well. And then they coughed it up. So fitting end to the that game, I would say. Or whenever it happened, I don't remember. I think it was second half when I noticed that.
There you go.
That's our recap for the week. We are at a brisk 40 minutes for this. And this is only three games. We're going to, like we said, we have to tighten this up next week. So we have games next week starting Friday night with, we'll get to those later, but Colorado, Colorado State. Then you also have Utah State, Wisconsin. Our preview show will be Wednesday night. So look forward to that. We will also break up the podcast like we did last week. And then also, I'm going to be chatting with, we're going to talk, I'll give a Wisconsin chat with Jake Kokorowski later today. That'll be up this week. And also talking with our guy Jeremy Harper about Boise State and Troy for kind of some side podcast.
Very nice.
Look for that, I guess, too. You can't avoid us anymore.
Why would you want to, though?
Exactly. So check us out, MWCWire.com, Facebook, Twitter. If you want to throw it through bucks for us at Patreon, I'd appreciate if you give up that big coffee and give it to us for a month. $3, $1, I don't care, right?
You're going to help us do awesome things if you do that for us.
Yes, that would be amazing. So it's just patreon.com/MWCWire. Those who have been helping us out so far, we appreciate it. It's been awesome. Thank you for that stuff. And that's all we got today. So as always, yeah, we're biased against your team.